a better way.
Hi, folks. This is Jack Spierka with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things we can all do to live a better life. If times get tough, or even if they don't. Today is Tuesday, July the 7th, 2015. This is episode 1605 of the Survival Podcast. And we are returning to the Insurgency series with a totally different way of looking at this. Today's show is called How Would You Design a Society from Scratch? And I know there's people that when I do shows like this go, how is this a survival topic? Well, let's look at it a couple different ways. Let's just look at a couple different ways from the modern survival perspective. Well, the first thing is, I think one of the biggest things we need to do if we're going to be able to survive is to be able to think. And people don't think much anymore, and I have some thoughts on thinking and what we've done to outsource our thinking that I'll save for later. But when we go through thought experiments like this, it does make us think at a critical level. And that is key to our survival in the modern world and our ability to adapt and overcome and improvise and be successful, whether it's at a homestead or whether it's at professional life in the mainstream world, if you want to say that. That it involves our ways to manage money are about critical thinking, investor about critical thinking, and most of the problems people have today revolve around money, and we'll get into that. So thinking alone. But number two, let's say you are a Mad Max true believer. The society will break down into nothing but a bunch of crazy people trying to kill each other. Well, eventually that has to stop. And eventually we need to form a blueprint for how do we rebuild things. And you know what? Not everybody's going to turn into a libertarian or a conservative Christian after an event like that. Far from it. So we might need to think a little bit broader than what we want and what would actually work. So whether we're talking like the total breakdown survival-minded person that, you know, let's maybe we think about how we would put things back together if something this bad happened, or we're just trying to learn how to think at a higher level, or those of us that believe that we're working in seventh generational thinking and the things that we're doing today are being laid down as brickwork for the eventual new society that will exist in seven generations long after we're dead, those of us who are planting trees under whose shade we know we shall never sit, this is looking forward into the future. So I think it has, on all levels, a survival concept theme running through it. I hope you'll enjoy it. Before we get into it, let's go ahead and take care of our sponsors. They do a lot to help take care of you by helping to make sure the show's here for you Monday through Friday, 5 days a week. Sponsor of the day number one today is JMBullion.com. When I'm looking for silver or gold, I go to JMBullion.com, and I'll tell you why. They're a small enough company that I can personally communicate directly with the president, Michael, at any time of my choosing. And that means as someone that's endorsing them, if you ever have a problem that doesn't get resolved by their customer service, which is 99% of the time stellar anyway, I can make sure that it gets taken care of for you. And I think that's really important in my sponsors. Next is pricing. The entire point of buying silver and gold is it's the same. You get the same silver eagle from JM Bullion as you do from Apmex or Monex. It's exactly the same. It's the same purity, it's the same weight, it's the same design, it's the same cut. It is the same. It's like buying a Wilson basketball, whether you buy it from, you know, Walmart or Academy Sports and Outdoors. It's the same. That's the point. So why pay more? So why not deal with a company that's a small company that has great customer service, that offers free shipping on all orders, and has better pricing when you're buying the same thing? Now, why silver and gold? I'm not an all-in guy. I'm not the guy that, like, you need to get out of the dollar, they're going to burn it to the ground, it's going to be worthless tomorrow, by the way, give me your dollars and here's some silver. I'm not that guy. But I do know that the plan for our money is a continued devaluation through the process of inflation, which is a hidden tax on the wealth of the American people. And I know that's the case because the former chairman of the Federal Reserve said so on the floor of the United States House of Representatives while being questioned by Ron Paul. He admitted that and said, it's okay. That's the way the system works. It's supposed to work that way. Well, if that's the plan, then my plan is to make sure I have a wealth assurance policy. We talk about insurance a lot, but assurance is equally important. And the way I personally do that is I have 10% of my net wealth, roughly, in silver and gold. I recommend that you do something similar. My personal recommendations are that you consider a wealth assurance program of 5 to 10% of your net wealth in hard commodities like silver and gold. And if you need silver and gold, I can't give you a better recommendation than JM Bullion. Check them out today. And remember, members of our support brigade, you do get a discount on larger orders from JM Bullion. Check the benefits section of your MSB account to learn more about that. Next up today, sponsor of the day number 2, westernbotanicals.com. I am a big believer in going to herbs before going to conventional medicines, be they prescription drugs, over-the-counter, I don't care. I have personally found that herbs are a more gentle way to treat the acute symptoms and chronic symptoms that we all deal with on a daily basis. Now, I'm not a doctor, and I don't prescribe treatments, and I never claim to. And the people at Western Botanicals, while they are a chiropractic facility, also don't make medical recommendations. They simply provide the highest quality herbs, raw herbs, and herbal supplements, and other things like essential oils for your own use. And they're real people that really care about you, and if you pick up the phone and call them, someone in Utah, not New Delhi, will answer the phone and help you make the right decisions for yourself. That's what Western Botanicals is all about. They are a great sponsor. They have been with us a very long time, 6+ years. That is forever in the world of podcasting. They also have a program called their Premium Membership Program where they give a 25% discount on everything they sell. They sell that membership for $50 a year every day. If you are a member of our support brigade, you get that membership absolutely free. All you have to do is call them up, give them the code word in your MSB account, and they will set up your account for you so you can get 25% off on everything they sell. Some of the favorite things that I use by them are the turmeric formula. That is one of the best anti-inflammatory things that I've ever used personally for myself. Again, I can't make individual personal recommendations on it, but I can tell you that I use it and it works for me. If my back is sore and achy, if my shoulder's acting up from an old injury from the military after a hard day working, I go to that. Their deep heat ointment is another great thing for that. They have a pain relief formula that uses valerian. Those are things I personally use on a regular basis. There's a lot of other really great things there. Basically, guys, if it's herbal and it's legal, you can find it at Western Botanicals, where their goal is to create an herbalist in every home to empower you not only to use their formulas, but to give you the raw herbs and the ingredients you need to make your own herbal formulations, including how to use the herbs from your own backyard and then get the parts for the formulation you need from them and the extra materials and the knowledge from them. You can get everything at westernbotanicals.com. Check them out today. Again, westernbotanicals.com. And if you're an MSB member, do not forget to get your premium membership, 25% off everything they sell every day of the year. Next up, let's take a look at the Bob Wells Plant of the Week. Every week, Bob Wells brings us a different plant that we can grow in our own yards or on our farms or what have you and help to feed ourselves. This week, we have the Isai Cold Hardy Kiwi. This plant is adaptable from zones 5 through 9. This kiwi is different from the one you know in the store. It has no fuzz. It's about half the size. This means you can eat it without peeling it. Many kiwis have male and female varieties, but this one is considered self-fertile, though some growers report larger yields if a male variety is planted nearby. It is a climber, so it's going to need some support. Some mature vines can bear up to 100 pounds of fruit, and it fills a great vertical niche in permaculture designs on larger trees. While it is widely adaptable, it certainly prefers soils that are more to the acidic side, typical of forest edges. So those of you like me trying to grow this, I'm getting somewhere with it, but it ain't like it would be if I lived, you know, a little bit east of here in the piney forests of East Texas. Just saying. Anyway, Bob Wells Nursery brings this plant to us like they do every week. Bob Wells Nursery specializes in edible landscape plants and trees, including fruit trees, berry plants, vine fruit, nut trees, as well as hard-to-find specialty trees. You can find this plant more at bobwellsnursery.com. Remember, if you're going to order from Bob Wells Nursery and you're an MSB member, you get 10% off everything that you order there. Good segue into the MSB. Do you like this show? Do you want it to be around forever? Consider becoming a Members Brigade member. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com. Click on Members to learn more. I'm going to keep this short today so the intro is not too long, but I just want to say, if you're buying stuff from the homesteading to the tactical to the practical, guns to gardens and everything in between, my membership program will pay you to be a member in the discounts that you'll get back. Again, learn more at thesurvivalpodcast.com. Click on Members. Next up, let's take a look at the year that was the episode. The year is 1605. We have Remember the 5th of November, and we have The Man of La Mancha, An Impossible Dream, and then we have An African Army Has Moved to Brazil. They're all great, but one particularly fits the kind of thinking we're going to talk about today, dare I say anarchistic thinking, even though what I'm going to tell you has nothing to do with anarchism, and certainly doesn't really belong, in my view, being a symbol of anarchism at all. Remember the 5th of November. Guy Fawkes wants to kill the King of England. He was born a Protestant Englishman, but he joined the Eighty Years' War on the side of the Catholic Spain. Guy is looking for support for his plan from the King of Spain, but after signing the Treaty of London, Spain refuses to get involved. Guy joins up with a number of English Catholics who want to blow up Westminster Palace. They want a tunnel under the building, fill it with gunpowder, and set it off during the open ceremonies of Parliament when King James is sure to be there. However, a large room under the Parliament House is made available for rent, so they take it. It's digging. They are discovered when one of the conspirators send out letters warning favored members of Parliament to stay away on that day. The king orders a search of the basement. Guy is caught and conspiracy is undone. Guy is sent to the gallows to be hanged, but he jumps from the platform, breaks his neck instead. Thereafter, the country will observe Guy Fawkes Day with bonfires, fireworks, and burning effigies of Guy Fawkes, otherwise known as the Guy. In 1982, DC Comics will turn Guy into a superhero in the comic book V for Vendetta, which will produce a mask so familiar to people in the modern day. A movie of the same name will follow in 2005. My take by Alex Shrugged. So what about the mask we see protesters wore? The hacker group Anonymous used the mask as a symbol, and so did Occupy Wall Street protesters. In the movie trailers for V for Vendetta, Guy Fawkes paraphrases Thomas Jefferson saying, "People should not be afraid of their government. Government should be afraid of their people." It would seem like the perfect movie for an idealistic libertarian, but Occupy Wall Street used the symbol of the mask to represent trust in big government. The overall goal of Occupy Wall Street seemed to be getting government to force private industry to do the bidding of government. That's fascism, plain and simple. I have the movie on order from Netflix. It should be interesting. Well, the movie has nothing to do with history, so Alex, I think you can enjoy it as entertainment, but there's really no historical accuracy whatsoever in that movie at all, other than maybe a few people's names, so just be prepared for that. My take by Jack Spirko here today. I find it interesting that this is the symbol of anarchy. This was not an attempt to eliminate government or to create a free society. This was an attempt to get rid of somebody in government that one person didn't like. You see, and that's what government calls anarchy. I can just see the King of England, okay, at the time that this country said, you know what, the hell with this, and wrote a Declaration of Independence and sent him a copy. You don't think King George said something like, this is anarchy? Right? See, to those in power, any attempt by those you have power over to resist, especially once successful in any way, you refer to it as anarchy, which is not what anarchy is at all. We're not really going to talk about anarchy today, but yet we sort of kind of are. But my point is, if this is what your view of anarchy is, blowing shit up, you don't understand anarchy. Because that in of itself would violate the non-aggression principle, which is cornerstone to real anarchism, that I do not use violence or force unless it is in defense of myself or others. And I can't just go blowing shit up because I'm pissed off. Because, well, you know, some of the people that get blown up might not be the people that did anything to me. I'm just saying. But just understand if your belief in anarchy is fire in the streets and Mad Max or blowing shit up or any of this stuff or some stupid mask or whatever, that's not what a stateless society is about. In fact, a stateless society is not a society without rule. It's a society without rulers. And it's not something just so everybody can relax. It's not something that's going to happen while anybody hearing my voice is alive here for all of us, period, infinity. So I'm couching today's entire discussion from this point forward with that reality. You don't have to worry about what I'm talking about happening because the good nor the bad are going to happen because people right now are in love with tyranny. People right now are having a love affair with the state. They just want their version of what the state is supposed to do. There are very few people that want true freedom for themselves because they realize true freedom for themselves would be freedom for all. So that's the first thing I want to kind of couch everything I'm going to say with today. The second thing is, I'm not saying at all today what we should do when I go into some of these thought experiments. Okay, what I actually want to read to you, which is seldom do I actually read a script on the air, but I'm going to do that. My intro for today's show in the show notes, I'm going to read that for you now. This show is designed only to make you think and think deeply about many issues. In my view, our society doesn't do enough thinking. Many people claim to think and say stuff like, I think blank should be or should not be done. This is not thinking, though. This is stating an opinion, often one the person really hasn't thought very much about at all. Thinking about an issue or a problem and how to solve it requires a total consideration of all sides, views, and a review of all facts and theories about the concept. We don't do very much of that today for superficial things like, should the family get a new TV or not right now? So we damn sure don't do it with things like, how do we feed our planet? No, instead we've outsourced all our big problems to government, then divided into two primary teams with a jackass and a fat elephant as mascots. We root for our teams every 2 to 4 years and trust that the jackass and the fat ass can then do our thinking for us. Hey, pause for a moment and think about that. America today has outsourced our decision-making to two groups that use a jackass and a fat ass as their representation. You know what they say about dogs and owners starting to look the same? But I digress. Today will be the first in a series of shows where we look at this question, and you can bet they will all be part of the Insurgency series. So the question, of course, again, is how would you design a society from scratch? And this is going to be very hard for a lot of you. It's hard for me because I find myself arguing points that are not germane to the subject, even when I'm having this dialogue in my head. Because the question is, how would you design a society from scratch? So all the baggage that we have in our world today, all of the resentment toward other groups and things, that all has to go out the window, not for the purpose of realism, but for the purpose of the thought experiment. And I want you to think about it this way. Imagine you were one of the first people trying to figure out how human beings could fly, whether it was motorized like the Wright brothers or with a balloon or with a glider or anything like that. You're just trying to figure out how can man get up where the birds are and cover greater distances faster. That's your problem. And all the people around you keep telling you, listen, dumbass, there's this thing called gravity. Look, you drop shit, it falls. Now, their argument's not invalid, but it's not germane to your problem, okay? Because what they're saying is because gravity exists, you can never fly. But you look up in the air and you see something as ugly as a vulture soaring 1,000 feet in the air, and all it does to turn a corner is just turn one feather a few degrees, and the whole bird turns and gets a new course. And then turns a couple more, and it drops down 200 feet in almost no time at all. And then it sees what it's looking for, so it cants a wing a little bit and begins a descending roll. So you look at that and you say, listen, I understand, I get that gravity's an issue for flight, but if that stupid bird can fly, surely we can engineer and build something that would be capable of us allowing us to do what that animal's doing, or possibly more, to reach levels and heights that that animal can't go to with some other type of technology. Well, you'll die up there. You'll freeze to death, you know? Well, we'll figure that out when we get that far. And you keep having people say, but gravity makes stuff fall. You can't do this. Eventually, you have to say, you know what? I'm done listening to you. Because I need to build a thing we're going to call an airplane. And even though no one's ever built one before, and even though I might fail 100 times, I'm going to build a freaking airplane. Or I'm going to try. And if I fail and fail and fail till I die, what I learn can then be taken by somebody else who believes it's possible, who will continue the effort, and eventually humanity will have an airplane. And today we have airplanes. And when you start having this discussion, how would you actually design a society? Now, I didn't say control a society. I didn't say rule a society. I said design, which means each designer doing their own thing with a common view of what the whole might look like, or even an uncommon view. But for your part in the process, what would you do? And that means you have to take things and words that have been ruined and not let them be ruined. So you have to take a word like anarchism, which is the absence of an archy. There's no oligarchy. There's no monarchy. right? There's no plutocracy. There's no archy. There's no Republican archy. There's no Democratic archy. That's what anarchy means. Anti-archy. It doesn't mean everybody killing each other. It could result in that, but it's not what it means. We take words like communism, and we have to not see them as systems of government, because communism is a collective beneficial relationship between individuals. Government tries to make that arrangement mandatory and enforced and regulated and controlled. And there's no reason for you to fear communism as a word, because we have tons of it in this country right now. Tons of it. We are not a free market system, and we do have forced socialism. That's communism. That doesn't mean that communism is bad. It means that the state is bad. If you and 20 other families decide you're going to build a village, you go out and collectively share resources in that village, it is communism. You're communing with each other. So we can't take a concept like shared resources and throw it away because it was something that was used by a person like Karl Marx, just because a whole shitload of what he said is really stupid and really bad. We also have to take and look at people like Marx and other philosophers who've come up with various systems and ideologies and realize that most of them didn't benefit very much from what they theorized. It was just a theory. It was just a thought. So, in many instances, these people did not intend to cause harm, even though their ideology might have been used to cause harm. And even if they did, we also have to accept the fact that anybody smart enough to effectively sell a philosophy to people understands the fundamental truth that the best way to sell a lie is with multiple truths. So I'll use five things that are true to lead you to a final thing that is untrue, but make you believe it by a preponderance of the evidence. I was right 5 out of 6 times. Maybe I'm actually right the 6th one. So a lot of these philosophies and theories, from Marx to Voltaire, and all of these other philosophers throughout time, Aristotle, etc., that are used by both big government and small government marketing groups, okay, have many truths within them. So we have to be willing to look at all potential solutions to a problem, even if we're going to rule out 99 of 100 of them. When I go to do a design on a property for a homestead, I have 100 different ideas about what to do with a given area. And 99 get thrown away. But I find the one through the examination of the 99. So please understand that anything I suggest as a possibility today isn't a proposed, we should do this. And to have this discussion, we need to get to a higher level of thinking and stop thinking like a freaking aspirin society. This is the hardest thing for people to let go of. There is this insidious belief in humanity, especially in our country, that if we just change one or two things about government, everything will be better. All bills should be no more than 10 pages long and only have information that pertains to the bill. Great idea. But they can draft a lot more bills. And you're asking the fox to guard your hen house and only eat one hen a month. And expecting it to be the result. It's not going to happen. So what we want is, well, if we get all small government types into government, well, they'll become big government types. It doesn't work. But the bigger issue isn't not that these things don't work. It's that we have this Band-Aid or aspirin mentality. That we should do this thing and then that'll fix things. So when anybody comes up with an idea, we immediately shit on it if it doesn't match our belief in it being a good Band-Aid. Not understanding that the idea itself may be one tiny piece of thousands or millions of solutions that actually advance us toward the society we would want to design if we got the chance. Because I'll propose this to you right now. If I gave you a magic wand and said, you can set up a society any way you want to set it up, you wouldn't do what we have. You wouldn't do what we have. So stop defending it. If it's not what you would do, then why are you defending it the way that it is? Well, why do you think a tweak here and a tweak there is all that's necessary? If you would design it totally different, at least experiment in your mind with what that would look like, because maybe I'm telling you, none of this shit's going to happen nationally or globally, period, so it's safe to think about. But you might decide it works for you, and you might start designing it for yourself. And for those that want to be part of the way you want to do it, even if it's 180 degrees opposite of what I would do. In fact, that would be great, because we'd get better information on the solution. But let's start out with, why do we have all these problems in the first place? I want to give you a test. Don't worry. You judge yourself whether you pass or fail, and actually nobody passes or fail, but we're going to learn a lot about ourselves. It's going to seem very simple, and it's going to get very deep very fast. It's even going to sound funny when I tell you what the name of the test is. The test is called the hot dog test. We are all going to take the hot dog test. And you're in the beginning going to think this is a really simple test, and it's going to get, again, really hard, really deep, really perplexing, really fast. And the more honest with yourself you are, the more confliction you'll feel internally as we go through the test. So the beginning of the test is, you haven't eaten in a couple hours, you're really hungry, your pockets are empty, you have no money. You're on your way home. When you get home, you're going to be able to eat, but it's going to be several hours. There's a guy selling hot dogs. He won't give you one unless you pay him. You don't have any money. And there's a fat kid walking towards you that you could easily trip and steal his hot dog, shoving a hot dog in his face. He's got two more under his arm, and you'd really like a hot dog. Do you knock the kid over and steal his hot dogs? And I think most of us would say no. Just because I want something that I don't have doesn't give me the right to take it from somebody else, even if they have more than me and don't really need it. It doesn't justify theft. And most of you do not need the threat of a law enforcement official to prevent you from doing this. Let's modify the hot dog test. There are no police around, and there's no law against stealing hot dogs from fat kids. In fact, it has become legally acceptable, not morally acceptable, but legally acceptable for any fat kid to have a hot dog stolen from him anytime anybody wants to, because kid's too fat, and if he eats less hot dogs, maybe he won't be so fat and a burden to society anymore. Remember, it's just an experiment. I'm not saying it's real. But in that instance, are you going to knock the fat kid over and take his hot dog? Some of you are laughing and thinking about doing it, and you're probably 15, at least in your head, and you need to grow up. Because most of us would say, no. I still recognize that however this fat kid came into the possession of this hot dog, unless I saw him steal it from somebody, and I need to defend them and give them their hot dog back, it's not right for me to take from another person. Basic human morality. Christians would think this way. Muslims would think this way. Jewish people, tribal people, pagans, atheists, deists, agnostics. Most common sense people would answer these questions up till now the same way. Okay. But remember, you were going home and you have food there. Now you're not going home. You have no money, you have no food, and you have no home. Fat kid now has a platter of hot dogs. He's shoving them in his face like a competitive eater. You don't know if you're going to eat today. But you did eat yesterday. Are you going to steal the hot dogs from the fat kid? Might you ask the fat kid if he would share a hot dog with you? If he says no, will you respect that and say, well, they're his hot dogs? What would you do in this instance? And most people with common sense would say, well, I would find a moral and ethical way to acquire enough money to buy myself a hot dog. And if I ate yesterday, that means I can do it. I'll depend on the kindness of strangers. I'll find a way to make a living. I'll wait till the fat kid throws his stuff away and pull out a garbage before I steal it. But one way or another, I have hope to eat tomorrow. So I'm not going to steal today. I'm not going to compromise who and what I am. Okay? Now you haven't eaten for 2 weeks. The fat kid has a wheelbarrow full of hot dogs. They look really good. They're all wrapped up. They're the good kind of hot dogs that you get at a baseball game. Okay. The fat kid is actually using one of them rascal scooters to pull a cart because he's so fat, he cannot even push a wheelbarrow anymore or walk. So he's taking his rascal scooter and his hot dogs home to stuff his face, and he does this every day. You feel that if you don't eat today, you could starve to death tomorrow. It might be too late for you. This is your last chance to get some food in you, to have enough energy to try again. Are you going to go up and smash the fat kid in the head and take the whole cart? Or might you sneak off and grab a couple hot dogs and say, hey, I hate doing this, but I gotta eat. Let's go deeper. Fat kid's on his rascal carrying the hot dogs. Remember, this is your only source of food. This is your only chance today to eat. You're weak. You may not be able to, function tomorrow without food. You've been that long. You have two children at home. You have two children at home that are in almost as bad a shape as you and a wife or a husband if you're the female. The fat kid is on his way home with hot dogs he doesn't need. Okay. On one side of the street are 50 people starving to death, willing to do anything to earn a living, with no opportunity to earn a living. Fat kid has six of these carts full of these hot dogs. You're among these people. You're starving to death while this fat kid shoves his face full of hot dogs. At this point, if you're completely honest with yourself, your kids are going to die. Your friends are going to die. Your families are going to die. You're going to starve to death. The fat kid weighs 400 pounds. He's on a rascal scooter. You know what you're going to say to yourself? Screw him. And you're going to take his rascal and you're going to hawk it for more hot dogs. This is why states exist. This is why we have a state. Because people, as they are oppressed at greater and greater levels, will do things that they would never have done otherwise. Now, again, you have to understand, this does not explain all crime. Not everybody would be a freaking choir boy if they had $50,000 a year guaranteed income and a full refrigerator of food and a nice place to live. That is moronic to think that way. But the question is, would less people stoop to what we call criminal behavior if they had protection and stability in their life? And the answer is yes. And if you say it's not true, then why did you reach a point where you would steal the fat kid's hot dogs? Because it is true. Because no matter how moral and upright and upstanding you are, there is a point where I can push you to where your greater morality is your own survival and the survival of those that you care for and look after and love. I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I'm saying it's human. So humans have formed governments for really three reasons. And I know you think there's more, but it could be two if I wanted to be a tight ass about it. It's protection, it's stability, and what we would call collective good or public works. So governments exist, in our minds anyway, to protect individuals. So if I steal from the fat kid, somebody will stop me and take me away. And you might say, if I saw somebody stealing a fat kid's hot dog, I would intervene. But will there always be someone to intervene that won't judge the kid for being fat, that will simply say this was his property. He acquired it legally and morally. If he wants to be fat, so be it. You can't take his hot dog. And of course, the hot dog could be a hot dog. It could be a home. It could be a farm. So throughout human history, people who didn't have taken from people who did. And we realize we can't have what we call a society with that type of shit going on. So in everything from the most basic tribalism to modern nations, we have created governments to create some level of protection, whether it's protecting a citizen from a fellow citizen or protecting a nation from another nation. Protection is one reason we have government today. Because you will break down and steal from the fat kid sooner or later. The next thing we need is to create a place where people are less likely to have to do this. Because if we just prevent this type of behavior, but half of the people die, we got a problem. Even if we don't have a moral problem with death, even if we're a sadistic asshole, you can't have all your cows die and still be a rancher. So from the top level to the bottom level, people look around and go, we want some stability in the world. So there needs to be a way that the person that's starving can be looked after. Well, we'll do it with private charity. Sure, sure. But it can only do so much. And what if it's not there? And can't there be ways that we can make sure that the people that really need help get help? Not only that from a stability standpoint, but don't we need to make sure that there are well-understood protocols for interacting with each other? Government sets that in place. So government exists to provide stability. And it really falls right into the third, which is collective good or public works, because these things actually provide stability and protection. So people start looking around and go, you know what, it'd be great if we could actually trade with that town over there. But it's really hard to get there. So let's put in a road to connect these two towns together. And then we can have security along that road because we have a single known route. We can determine places where we're at risk. We can fortify those areas. So this gives us protection and stability. And now that we can trade with another town, if we're short on one thing this year and they're short on something else, we can have commerce. That creates stability. So as evil as government has been, in so many ways. And again, I challenge you, and no one's ever taken my challenge. If you made a list of the 100 largest mass murderers in global history, I to this day maintain that you would find every single one of them was acting legally under the laws of their nation and was the leader of their nation. From Tamerlane to Hitler and back, that every mass murderer in history on the top 100 list was technically obeying their law and had the power of the state behind them, or they would not have been able to. So government's done some terrible things. We should all accept that. We should also accept that they've done some pretty good things for the evolution of society. Men would not have walked on the moon by now without government. That doesn't mean I don't think we could have been further by now with less government. I think we could be much further by now. But getting to where we are required a stability and a protection where people would say, I can now focus on doing a job, like building a computer system or a navigation system or a farming implement or whatever. And I don't have to be looking over my shoulder every 5 seconds worried that somebody's going to come bash my brains in and take what I have. And this is why nations with more free versions of oppression, like us, have done more than nations with more overt oppression. People want to look at communism and say, communism doesn't work. Look what happened to the Soviet Union. Well, we're on our own track toward financial oblivion, which is what got them. In the real world of judging two systems, capitalism and full-on communism, guys, they got second place. They got second place. They put men in outer space. They did technologically almost as much as we did on every level. It works, it just doesn't work as good as it could. It's like saying, you know, Miracle-Gro doesn't work. Well, of course it works. If it didn't work, nobody would buy it. You put it on a tomato, the plant gets bigger. Is it the best solution? Those are two totally different things. And when we argue positions of that doesn't work, if someone looks at it, we weakens our argument. This is like telling kids, don't do pot because you'll die. Kids look around and go, there's an awful lot of people smoking pot, not dying. I don't believe you. If you want to make an argument against something, you have to make arguments that are cogent and actually representative of the actual risks and acknowledge the benefits of any individual thing and say, this is why this is better. Miracle-Gro will make your tomato better, but it will put heavy metals into your food. Yay! You can use this organic alternative and it's better, or you can develop overall soil health and eventually not have to do any more work. But if I just start out with that doesn't work, and your neighbor's dumping it on their tomato, and their plant is like 5 feet taller than yours, and they're eating tomatoes, and your stuff's all dead, you don't believe me. Because I lied. Even though I meant well, I assumed you knew what you didn't. I assume when I said it doesn't work, you knew that I actually meant it doesn't work that good, or it's not the best solution, and here's what the alternatives are, even though I didn't give you those alternatives, or acknowledge that the Miracle-Gro worked. Well, that's what we have to look at government. We can't say government doesn't work. There's too many amazing things that we've done, this nation alone, to say government doesn't work. But the question is, do we need it? And how long do we need it for? And what is necessary for us not to need it anymore? I mean, that's a huge question. But I want to give you some serious questions now with those things in mind. And I'm not going to give you answers to them, really. We'll talk about them when I'm done, but I want you to come with your own answers. First question, does money really make sense? And don't even get into how we create money and say, well, should it be a gold standard or whatever. Just the modern concept of money, a banking system, a monetary creation scheme, in any way that money's existed for the last 5,000 years, does money make sense today? If so, how? If not, how? Does it make sense, but could it be better? Might there be a way to run a monetary system that's like nothing we've even looked at yet, including Bitcoin? All right. Next question, and this is a dead serious question. Should people have to work? Now, I know if you're a hardworking individual like I am, your gut is, damn right you should have to work by the sweat of your brow or whatever, okay? But let's let that go. Let's let that go. Because let's go to the next question now. If people didn't have to work, what would they do? Okay. If people didn't have to work, what would they do? They'd lay around on their ass. Are you sure? Would you? Would you? If I started sending you a check once a year for $50,000 a year, would basically pay all your basic expenses, would you sit around on your ass the other 364 days a year waiting for your next check to come in? Would you? Is that really what you would do? And my gut is, for most of you, is no. It's not what you would do. It's not what you would do at all. So what would people do if they didn't have to work? Notice I didn't say weren't able to work. I said they didn't have to. And let me ask you another question that starts to dig into some of the problems we have today. Because if we're going to solve these problems, we have to solve them with new thinking. And we have to solve them for ourselves. Government's not going to do this. And again, if you're like, oh my God, this turns into world government, nobody's going to do this at a policy level. None of this shit is going to happen in your lifetime at a policy level anywhere. It could happen in a town in Vermont or a block in South LA. But it ain't going to, so you can let go of that fear for a minute, huh? And just start thinking. But let's ask ourselves another question. How much work is really useful and important today? I mean, do you think if we really looked at what people do for a living, we could come up with about, 10 million gainfully employed people that if they just stopped working and they just went away somewhere, that nothing would really happen? I mean, financially, let's put the finances aside for a minute. Let's just talk about functionality. Like, would people really give a shit? Or if we didn't have certain, how many jobs wouldn't exist without certain regulations? What if you didn't have to get a registration paper from the state for your car? There was no license plate, there was no registration, there was nothing like that at all. You didn't have to prove who you were. You bought a car, it was your car. That's the end of it. You drive your car. Let's not worry about whether you have a license to drive or anything yet. Just no license plates. The auto manufacturers stamped, right? One more step in the manufacturing process, right? Right onto the front and back of the car. They just stamped an imprint. There was an individual personal identification number for the car, like a MAC address for a computer. Gee, so we can do that. Okay, how many people in government jobs across the whole country are absolutely no longer necessary? So is their work really meaningful, or have we created something for them to do because of a belief that they need to have a job and that we need to have this service performed? So how much work is really useful and important that's being done today? Another way of looking at how much isn't, okay? How many jobs are currently protected from technology? How many jobs could be eliminated with technology if there weren't protection systems in place to prevent technology from taking over, like unions and guilds and regulations? You know, think about it. Do you really think we couldn't have trucks that drove themselves by now? Of course we could. Do you think we really couldn't have a railroad system free from monopolies that was a better transportation mechanism with automation that basically had cars that were trucks? And the long haul portion was done by train, automatically derailed and matched up with autonomous vehicles that took off the individual cars like trucks do today to the places they need to go. Do you really think we couldn't be doing that yet? We put a man on the moon with a computer system that filled up a huge room that had less computing power than the iPhone in your pocket, and we couldn't figure out how to do that by now? We don't have those things because we need to protect jobs because of the belief that everybody needs a job and everybody has to do work. I'm not even saying they don't. I'm saying that's why we are stymied where we are. And it started to change anyway. Certain ideas eventually push through these resistance points. Next question. What do people really want in their lives? You think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs or whatever, but just try it for yourself. Then what do you really want in your life? The next question. Is there really anything approaching a resource shortage in the world? Is it really the case that there's not enough for everyone? Or is it the case that some people can't get what they need? And how much that we could be doing are we not doing because of things that we believe have to be the don't? Think about those questions. And again, I'm not telling you what the answer is. I'm not even telling you I have the answers. I'm telling you I have 20 answers to every one of those questions. And I see them all as equally valid in dissecting the problem. Now I got some more questions for you, though. These are all how would you questions. If I gave you the power to design society, to say the way that things should be, a magic wand, if you will, to create this type of society, how would you solve these issues? And I want to talk to you about something kind of humorous, but actually I thought was very poignant when I heard it. One of my favorite TV shows is called The Big Bang Theory. And for those who don't know, it's about these guys that are like super smart, like physicists, astrophysicists, an engineer that designs things for the space station and like for the Mars rover. These guys all work at like Caltech. And there's a girl in the thing that lives next door that's kind of a little bit ditzy, but she's a wannabe actress. Now she's a pharmaceutical rep of all things. And through that, there's this on and off again relationship with one of these scientist guys and this good-looking blonde girl. And during one of the off-again periods, she's got this boyfriend named Zach. And Zach's like this big muscular guy. And the guys all want to go to the comic book store on New Year's Eve for a costume competition and be the Justice League of America. And they realize like this Zach guy would make like the perfect Superman. He even kind of looks a little bit like the character. And he's actually big and strong like Superman would be. And without him knowing all this, they just turn to Zach and say, "Hey, Zach, how would you like to be Superman?" And he's kind of a dumbass. And he goes, "I don't know. Sounds like a lot of responsibility." And of course, everybody laughs. But actually, that's very intelligent, isn't it? If you thought somebody, you didn't know what was going on, you thought somebody was asking you a hypothetical question. Just, would you really, how would you like to have all the powers that we think of in Superman? You could fly, immune to bullets, faster than a speeding bullet, etc. If you actually paused and said, "I don't know that I want that much power. I don't want that much authority." That's actually very intelligent and rational, which makes it very hard for you to break out of a shell and think about such solutions to problems that are this big. This is why psychopaths run your country, because they don't have that shell. If you ask them, "How'd you like to be Superman?" their honest answer, if they thought you were being serious, is, "That's awesome. Great. Give me the power now. I'll take more if I can get it." Where most of us would say, "Well, wait a minute. If we really got past like the euphoric ideology at first of like, wow, I could have all these powers." But if you started thinking about like, okay, if somebody's going to be that person, should it be you? If I said by some kind of space alien magic, as we would think of it, and you believed me, some group of aliens came down and said that they watched our popular culture and felt that we needed a Superman. And I rang you up and said, "I have decided," because they put their trust in me to pick somebody and told me it couldn't be me. I had to pick somebody else. "I have decided I'm going to choose you." How many of you would go, "You know what? You know what? There's someone else better trusted with this authority than me." Okay? The people that rule your country would kill somebody for it. That's the difference. So you have to allow yourself to think with that level of control, even though it's completely unnatural for you as a basic human, because you don't want that much power. You don't want to control other people. But if you have to think about these questions from a standpoint of, you don't have a choice. The choice has been made. You've been named in charge. And people are going to starve and die if you can't answer these questions with something cogent. So how would you then feed our planet? How would you feed everybody? Just make sure that everybody eats. And every day that someone starved to death, you'd know you had the power to do something to prevent it from happening and chose not to. Yeah? How would you incentivize the development of better technologies? I mean, if we're going to have the world that we're capable of having, and everybody is going to have enough, and I think we can do that, we need to advance technology way beyond where it is. We really do. We can use old solutions and new technology together, but we need new technology. We need to mechanize the shit out of stuff. We can transform deserts into scrub forests and scrub forests into beautiful forests and preserve the beautiful forests that are left. And those things can provide us resources and foods and medicine. But we're not going to do it for 7 billion people without more technology. We can save lives with technology. Just because the drug companies have patented and repatented and repatented the same thing to make billions of dollars off of sickness and illness industry doesn't mean there aren't advances to be made and that are being made in medicine. How do we incentivize the development of technology? Not in our system. If you were creating the system from scratch, how would you do that? How would you provide medical care? I think the reason people are so conflicted about something like Obamacare is in their hearts, people feel that like anybody that's sick should be able to see a doctor. But then you think, oh my God, look at what happens when we have illegal aliens using the emergency room over skin, knees, and runny noses. Well, what the hell is going to happen if we make free health care for it? There won't be enough for everybody. So you have to wrestle with questions like, are there a lot of people that go to the doctor that don't need to be there? Who makes that decision then? The doctor? The patient? Somebody else? Do you ration care? Or do you just be honest with people and say, listen, if you have one of these problems, you don't need a doctor. You need a Band-Aid or an aspirin or, you know, do we give people ways to do self-diagnostics? Can we develop technology that says this person needs a doctor? This person doesn't. How often will that technology fail? Even if it fails, will it fail more or less frequently than the low-level medical diagnostics performed by individuals today? These are tough questions. There's no easy answer to any of these. I made sure they wouldn't have any easy answers. How would you allow for freedom of expression, religion, etc.? How would you create a society where it was acceptable for everybody to have their faith, everybody have their belief, and yet nobody's individual rights to be trampled upon? How would you create that? How would you design a system that led to that? How would you provide educational services? Or how would you ensure that educational services were provided? That's probably a better way to put that, right? Because provide, that means you're going to actually be a state. But what would you do as a designer? When I design a system on a piece of land, I don't go in and impose my will on it. I set up a design and there's a natural outcome from the process. So that's the way you have to look at this. How would you design a system where you could have all different forms of education with nobody getting in the way? But anybody that wanted to learn, learning. I think we've come a long way already with just the internet. You have access to the totality of human knowledge on an iPhone right now. And most people are using it to argue with strangers. What do you think your grandmother... You know, if you're old enough that your grandmother has been gone a while, and if you're not, think of your great-grandmother, somebody that grew up and lived through the Great Depression. If you showed them today what an iPhone does and then said the majority of people go on this thing called Facebook and have arguments with people they don't know with it, when you have access to every library in the world, basically, communicate with anybody you want to. We choose to argue with people we don't know about things we can't change. they might think you're pretty damn dumb. They might say, did you guys outsource your decision making to a fat ass and a jackass? Sounds like you did. Just saying. So we've come a long way with that technology, but how do we keep it going? And not how do we impose a educational system? How do we design a system with so many educational opportunities that the student's biggest question is, how do I choose this journey for myself? How do you design communities, villages, towns? How do you get out of the way so they can form? And yet make sure there's enough support available so that they can form? How do you protect individual rights? Oh, by the way, you have to do all this without a state. I didn't tell you that? Yeah, let's go back through them again. You have to do all of this without a state. You get to design it, but you don't. There's no state. There's no law enforcement. You have to put things in place. You can move shit around. You can allocate resources. You can do anything you want. But once it's done, people get to use it as they see fit, and you don't get to tell them what to do. Huh? Thinking. It's dangerous. Okay. How would you protect individual rights in that system? As a designer, not as a ruler. How would you indeed enforce rules without a government? How would you create a self-policing society? How would you create a society where when the hungry man is passing the fat kid with a hot dog, and there's plenty of hot dogs, it's a natural condition that someone sees that the man is hungry and offers him a hot dog? And says, hey man, what's going on? What can we help you with? And that person is receptive to help, because it's expected, but it's not going to take advantage of help. It's just going to keep showing up every day to get a free hot dog. It's going to say, hey, this is why I don't have any money right now. I lost my wallet or whatever. I need to get home. I don't have a job. And the natural extension is, you don't need a job. You needed something to do. Here's something to do. How do you enforce rules without government? Or perhaps, how do you have government without a state? See, government we've confused with state. Governance exists at all kinds of levels where there is no state. If you have a group that you go backpacking with, your group has governance, but there's no state. Now, there's certain things the state makes your group do, okay, but no. No, let's let that out of the picture for a second. That group has things like, we don't leave litter on the trail. And the group's collective agreement not to litter the trail has more to do with the trail staying clean than the state's, I will write you a fine if I catch you throwing litter in the middle of the woods where none of our people ever are to find you doing it. Because you know they're full of shit and they're not going to know you did it. But most backpacking groups have that rule. They have governance without a state. See, so you can do it. So what is required for these things? What is required for these things? Moral, ethical people that respect the rights of others and want to help anyone they can whenever they feel someone truly is in need of help. That's actually all you need. Now, it's harder than it sounds. Because 10% of people, I believe, have a mental defect, a wiring defect in their mind. And I also believe that young people, especially young men, but I'm seeing more and more proof that young women are maybe worse. They're just, in the past we haven't seen it, and now we're seeing it for what it is. Have a the lack of maturity results in a lot of these things being misconstrued and misunderstood, and young people will do stupid shit, especially in the absence of older people to keep them in line. So we have to preserve the family /community/village style mentality. I say some of you, when I said village, went, Hillary Clinton, stop it. Stop it. Just because a socialist asswipe statist used an African proverb to sell a book doesn't negate the proverb. You can't see. So what happens is, in our current system, when a person we vehemently disagree with, that we know is wrong, that we do not want in charge of us, uses a phrase or makes a statement that actually hits home, it ruins it for half of society. And the other half of society grabs onto it like it's a freaking Bible verse. So you have liberal nonsense socialist statists walking around going, it takes a village, and they have an IQ of 13. If you add their sister's IQ to theirs. And then you have the conservative faction, right, going, it doesn't take a village, it takes a damn father putting a foot in a kid's ass. And the other side goes, he's so brutal. And nothing changes about the structure of who's in charge. Because we let them dictate our language. How can you be free? How can you exist in a state of liberty if you're willing to let somebody else taint words for you and redefine their meanings for you? Instead of saying, this is what this word actually means. You keep using that word, I don't think it means what you think it means. And when somebody does that long enough, we actually become afraid of the word. Land of the free, but we're not free to define words the way they're meant to be defined. Home of the brave, we fear a word once it's been maliciously attacked enough. And you could come up with phrase after phrase after phrase that's polarized to one side or another that no one will listen to anymore because of a policy of division. But yet groups naturally self-organize. Anarchy is actually a natural state. What actually has interfered with it is government. But the reason we've allowed that is sometimes natural states go really wrong. What's actually required for us to have governance without a state is a truly evolved society. A society where theft is just considered wrong, period. That's why anarchists don't want a state, because we think theft is wrong no matter who does it. You need a society where people just say anybody that's trying, that's having a problem, deserves help, period. I'm not going to let somebody starve. It's just not going to happen. You go into tribal societies, and you ask them if there's ever been a time where one person in the tribe starved to death. They'll look at you like you have a tree grown out of your ear. In a tribal society, the only way anybody's starving is if everybody's starving. Whatever's there is shared. Who forces this? You think the chief forces this? You think the shaman forces this? The people that rule tribal societies don't come to power the way that they do in the rest of the world. In any tribal society, if they actually think that the chief's not doing a good job, he either steps down or he gets his head cut off. Power is given because trust is earned. And every single person in that society can go talk to the chief. He doesn't have a bunch of guards around him. He's just the person that's considered most trustworthy and have the greatest judgment. And yet, the best hunter would be asked when we move to different hunting grounds. And if the chief doesn't agree, we're probably going to side with the hunter, unless the chief is also a really great hunter. The chief's position is when there's two hunters that are equally good and both have different opinions about how to proceed. Not to determine who's right, but how do we make the best use of both opinions? Natural state. You don't think that governance without a state is natural? Put 20 people in a room who actually want to do something. Not that want to run something. They want to do something. So that's the difference. Government types... When I say government, state government types. Statists want to control things. They want to run things. In the iron law of bureaucracy, they're the bureaucrats. They're the smaller percentage that sees to the organization itself versus the mission. Most human beings are not that type of person. That's why we're miserable when we get jobs allowing us to be that type of person. That's why most people that have government jobs that aren't really necessary are actually miserable. They're happy to have the benefits and the money, but they're not fulfilled people in their work. Why do you think that when you go to these interfaces with public employees, like the DMV, that everybody's so rude and miserable? You'd be rude if you were miserable. That's why. And you're probably miserable because you don't want to be there because the whole thing's stupid. Why do we have to go to the DMV to get tags or a license today? How stupid is this? How ridiculous is this that human beings are forced into that environment to fulfill the needs of a state? Of course everybody's miserable. But if you get a whole bunch of people together that, like I said, want to go backpacking. Or let's say I came into 1,000 acres of land. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to take the first 200 people. First 200 people that show up and say, you're staying on my land. You have a stake in it. And we're all going to, I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to work it out. We're going to figure out how to make this 1,000 acres into an intentionally planned community. And all I'm promising you is an equal stake. That's it. No one's going to be in charge. Nobody's going to run anything. We're all going to have to figure out how to do something. We're all going to have to get along. The people that would be problem causers would not show up. No, I'm not asking you for money or anything. I'm asking for your time, your talent, your effort. You don't have to buy your way in, nothing. Somebody blessed me and just left me 1,000 acres. I said, Jack, know you'll do good things with it. And I go, shit, finally. Finally, I have an opportunity to do this. And I just say, you know what? Fine, I'm going to take 200 of you. You know, or 250. Everybody has about 4 acres of the land that they can be responsible to do something with. Not own, do something with. To have stewardship over. And we all got out there. What do you think would happen? By the way, this is like 1,000 acres in some unincorporated place where nobody can really bother us unless we're cooking meth or something like that. Like, if we want to put in a building, no one's going to say nothing. Just as much freedom as you can have in our current system. And we get there, and some guy is camping and has a garbage bag full of garbage, and he just takes the bag and he just whips it, like out in the back 40. You think everybody's going to sit there and go, well, that's okay. I think I'll do that too. You think everybody's going to go, yo, Tom, hey, what are you doing? What the hell's wrong with you? That's not what we're here for. Do you think we might collectively determine there might be a place for garbage to go and a way to sort garbage and a way to deal with it? Like certain garbage has to actually go to some sort of landfill. Let's try to minimize that because we have dependence on other people then. These types of things can go here. These types of things can go here. This is how this stuff becomes valuable instead of destructive. Somebody might want to oversee this, provide this service to the rest of the group. The rest of the group might tender some sort of consideration for that. Okay, so we've got a waste management issue now, right? Well, where's everybody going to live? Don't you think we might, as a group, realize, okay, maybe all of us here together at first is not the best thing, so we need to figure out who are our pioneers, who are going to get the initial structures in place? How do we do that? How do we organize work-ins? How do we create a transitional period to where everybody can come here permanently? How do we allocate the resources? Okay, we can hunt this property, but we can't have 200 people hunting on 1,000 acres at the same time. Who wants to hunt? Who doesn't? How do we figure out how much game to take and leave? You don't think we'd figure that out? What would happen is an entire structure of governance, independent of any state, would exist. And in the end, you wouldn't have to elect people because the people would all be there for a common ideal and goal. And they would naturally organize around that goal. What causes problems is stress. When there's not enough food, there's not enough money, there's not enough resources. Some people are cold, some people are wet, some people are hungry, and other people aren't. Now, what does that have to do with fixing society? Everything and nothing. Everything, because the solutions to our problems in the world, in the worlds of Jeff Lawton, are embarrassingly simple. We should be ashamed as a species that we cannot get them done. But they're also so complex that they're damn near impossible on some levels as well. I mean, that's something that's really hard to take in at the same time, that some things are extremely easy and extremely difficult at the same time. But it's the truth. We could feed the planet a hell of a lot better than we're doing now. But under our current systems that exist throughout the world, we could set up a system where every human being is paid $50,000 a year. Let's say $52,000 a year. You get $1,000 a week. $1,000 a week for existing. And we could, I'm getting up to where I have to end the show today, so I'm not going to go deeper into this, but we could do that. Guaranteed income for life. And then, so all of the social programs that exist go away. That's the only one that's left. There's no housing, there's no Section 8, there's no child support from the state, there's no earned tax credits, there's no none of that. It's all gone. There's no unemployment compensation, and there's none of the jobs necessary to provide all those services anymore. They're all gone. So none of the taxes necessary to provide all those services, they're all gone too. It's gone. It's just gone. And everybody has $1,000 a week to see their own housing, their own food, their own needs, period. And you know what it would be in our current system with the current mental status of our people and the current debt-based economy that we have? An unmitigated disaster that would make Armageddon look like a day at Disneyland. That's what it would be. It would be all of the objections you're coming up with right now why that couldn't work are absolutely valid under the current system. But if we had a system that was designed to work that way, it'd probably be a hell of a lot better than what we have. So how do we get from something like we have to something like that? And that's not, when I say like that, I don't necessarily mean that's the solution. Though I can think of some ways to set up a virtual nation that might actually work that way and be completely free of fraud. Let me leave you with one little idea here, because I know this is very challenging for some of you, because most of you are hardworking individuals that think that the government takes too much away and gives it to other people. And I agree, and you may not think I do hearing me say things like this, but every form of government assistance punishes immediately any attempt by the individual to become more successful and stable. So you say, well, the person on welfare never works again. They stay on welfare for the rest of their life. Well, that's because if they do anything, even short term, to earn income and then fail, they can't get back to where they were, so they're afraid to try. If you had a guaranteed income, again, $1,000 a week to pay basic needs for all adult individuals, okay, that you would never lose no matter how successful you became. What might that lead to? What might that lead to? How many people really would spend all their time playing Dungeons and Dragons or World of Warcraft? Some would. How many people don't do jack shit right now and cost us a hell of a lot more than 50 grand a year when you add up the total cost to society? Even if some people would be completely vagrant deadbeats, would there be more or less of them? If you, see, this is where you have to like separate yourself from the issue and then let it only apply to you. If I endowed you with the Jack Spirico Guaranteed Income for Life grant, where $1,000 would magically appear in your PayPal account every day for the rest of your life, would you stop being productive and go screw off for the rest of your life? Or would you think, my God, what an incredible amount of stability in my life. Now I can do that which I really want to do and try to be successful in some other way. And what might that unleash? Who can be trusted with it and who can't? It's not who. It's what's necessary for people to be trusted with it. Education, development, morality. It can be done. Again, you'll never see it in your lifetime. That's my big problem with things like, you know, zeitgeist and stuff like that. It's like, oh, we'll just evolve into this in a couple months. No. The world will burn before this happens right now. If nothing else, because the tyrants in control will set it on fire to prevent it from happening. It has to be done at the individual, community, and local level. But it can be done. Here's my question. What is our alternative to answering these and other important questions? What's our alternative if we don't struggle with this? If we don't start working on it now? If we leave it for somebody else? If we let the fat ass and the jackass continue to be in charge of making these decisions? What does the future look like if we stay on the progression that we're on right now? If either ass wins, if we ever reach a day where the jackass or the fat ass completely gets in charge, do you like the world 100 years from now? If you don't, start wrestling with these questions, learning to think, and designing your own solutions in your own life. With that, this has been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
Sometimes we forget we are what we eat. I don't know the answer. It's like there's nothing I can do. It's the price we pay, I guess, when we follow all the rules. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution is you.